Vaishnava standard.
His Holiness, Sri Swami Chidananda Saraswati, is one of India's most revered spiritual teachers. Hundreds of millions of Hindus consider him a living saint. High in the Himalayas, where the river Ganges plunges through deep rocky ravines, in the holy village of Rishikesh, Swami Chidananda heads the Shivananda Ashram. Since 1955, he has traveled throughout the world, propagating the teachings of service, meditation, and nonviolence.
Here we are poised at the beginning of a new century, at the beginning of a new millennium, with a world that seems to be hurting. How can we help the world?
By making the world take a look, a retrospective look, for the past 90 years of this present 20th century, and try to see what are the errors, mistakes we have committed, and how come these things happen.
To pay attention to our history that is full of error.
Yes, that within the first half of this century, humanity went into two great global conflicts. War, first of all, starts in the hearts and minds of people. So if you can change the thinking of people from violence to non-violence, maybe the world would be saved another such. One of them was Count Leo Tolstoy, and another well-known figure was our own compatriot, Mr. Gandhi. Was called the great soul Gandhi, Mahatma Gandhi. And he saw that it is in the dimension of human feeling and thinking that all actions are born.
Each individual.
Each individual, and also each group of individuals. So he tried to make people realize that it is, you have to establish peace within and become clean within. Start to forgive and forget.
Where does the power to forgive, as you say, how do you make that connection? How does an individual make that connection?
The power to forgive is inherent in all beings, because within every human individual, there is a spark of divinity. That is the central spiritual discovery of all those who have entered into transcendental spiritual experiences.
In every person?
In every person, in every creature, as a matter of fact, one divine principle is hidden in all human beings. It is all pervading, at the same time, it is also indwelling. And this reality which resides within the heart of all beings is perfect. It is full of those divine perceptions that inherit in God. Infinite love, infinite forgiveness, infinite purity, infinite peace, infinite joy. All that is auspicious, blessed and beautiful is inherent in every human individual, like a great towering big tree with its spreading branches and towering height, and fruits and foliage and flowers is inherent in a tiny little seed.
But as we sit right here, a matter of a few feet away from us, of rows of homeless people asking for help, who don't necessarily know that. There are people also operating buildings, running commerce. How is that message brought?
This message is the central content of the teachings of all the prophets, the messiahs, the messengers of God that have come and raised the earth and taught from time to time in different parts of the world. And the core of the teachings is in their living words. And that is what each religion tries to vagaries follow us.
But what gets in the way of that knowledge? We've had it for a long time.
It is the neglect of religion.
The neglect of
religion.
Yes,
because man is too much involved in the world, too much in pursuit of immediate pleasure, immediate present sensations, wanting to possess, wanting to enjoy, that he has no time for the cultivation of his inner being. And therefore, anything that comes in the way of his rush, his mad, crazy rush after enjoyment, there's a mental block. He puts it away.
It's a problem of self.
It's a problem of self. Man has no time to pay attention, and anything that is uncomfortable and inconvenient, he does not want, even though it is ready for him, out of which to enrich his life. He doesn't want it because it comes in the way of his getting immediate pleasure. So for the sake of immediate pleasure, he sacrifices his own lasting happiness and peace and that of others also. Because religion is about two dimensions. Man's connection with God, man's connection with man. Love God with all thy heart, love thy neighbor as thine own self.
I've read in one of your writings that you say the clue to finding the divinity within is selfless service.
Unless your life is lived in a selfless, dedicated matter, full of love for others, consideration of others, life is based upon the spirit of selfless service, expecting nothing. Your prayers and deep meditation, your yoga and other things will be fruitless. It will be going round and round in a circle. It will be waste of time.
So without selfless service, prayer and meditation is...
It's not possible. They have to become mine. Because God is as much within you and somewhere He is as much in the creation that He created. He permeates all creation. He invades all creatures. Even an ant, an insect, reptile, everything. Therefore, seeing God in all.
So we look outward as well as inward to see.
Both. Through meditation, you contact the presence of God within. Through selfless service, you relate yourself to the God who is in all.
Let's bring it to a momentary situation, one that a lot of urban Americans are facing almost daily. They walk down the street and they see a beggar. They're busy. They're going to their job. What do? Do they walk past? Do they put a small bit of money, which only represents the very token, and is almost an insult? If they stop, how do they help? What is that moment of choice? What is one to do?
Bettina, I have only one thing to tell you. They have only one thing they must do. As they encounter such a person, if they were the person sitting there and the other person was what they are, what would they expect that person to do to them? Would they like a cent, 5 cent piece to be thrown and walked away? Or would they like the person to say, good morning, is there anything I can do for you? Here is a dollar. So let each one put oneself into the other person's place. Then your question will be answered. Then they will do the right thing.
You mean to say, what can I do for you?
If you were in that position, what would you want someone else to do for you? Just walk past, or just throw it, dime and go, or something else? Put yourself in the other person's place. And then whatever you feel would have been your wish from others, do that.
You're working commercially in life, and you get offered a job, but you know that the work you're being asked to do, and you have an income and a family, is not really honorable work. How do you decide?
In this world, when you have got dependents and you have to support people, if the work is not 100% honest, maybe you are compelled to compromise to some extent. But if it is either criminal are immoral, the decision is there. You have to take change and go to some other world. You cannot sell your conscience. And if you do that, if you have the courage to do it, if it's immoral and if it's criminal, if you have the courage to do it, some work will be waiting for you. God will provide.
What do you do when you meet a person that you feel has no awareness? They are busy meeting their personal needs, their maybe family needs, seeking material life entirely. How do you, can you intercept?
I do nothing unless they ask me a question. If they seek guidance, then I tell them, look here, whatever you are doing, please pause and think for a while. Where were you? I ask him his age usually. He says, I am 37. I ask him, where were you 30 years ago? I don't know. I said, no, you know. What do you mean? You know that you are not here. You did not have a body, you did not have a name, you did not have a human identity. You are not in this human world at all. This much at least you know. And I'm telling you, another 80, 90 years afterwards, where will you be? He's little, he never thought about this. Then he says, I won't be here. Well, so that state in which you were before you came into this state and became a human actor on the stage of the world in this drama called life.
So Shakespeare was right?
Yes, yes, it's a beginning and it is an end.
All the world is a stage.
All the world is a stage. You come and play your part and afterwards go. The drama may go on, but you are only here for a little while. So for this little while, will you completely forget?
But you're saying there's life beyond the stage.
Because life was even before you entered the stage. So I begin to make them take a look at their entire life in a different way. That opens up some dimension of thought for you. They start thinking, yes, yes, I never thought about it before.
You made reference to prayer. What does it mean? I mean, what?
Prayer is a restoration. Well, Master was sometimes very humorous also. He says the whole of religion is nothing but telephone operators' work in the exchange. He used to say, what do you mean? Well, the telephone operator disconnects from one and connects with the other. Detach, attach, detach, attach. So you are so much 100% attached only to this passing outward world where you are yourself a passing pilgrim. There is no good. You come from somewhere else. That is your real abode. That is your true eternal ground. Don't forget that. Therefore, while you are here, occasionally detach from this. Attach yourself to the hotline with God. That inner attaching yourself to the source of your being is called prayer. It is not necessarily asking anything or seeking anything. It is just once again abiding in God. You abide in Him always, but you forget it. Therefore, consciously attach yourself to God. Put off all other thoughts. Think, I live, move, and have my being in God. Not some remote God somewhere far off, not some hidden God somewhere, the now, here God, I abide in Him. I am in Him. He is in me. We are never apart. Come to that state and abide. That is prayer. And so He is always with you, always helping you, always doing things for you. He is real.
He is real?
He is. And everything that exists is vibrantly infilled with the Spirit, with the presence of God. He is not only somewhere, He is not only here and now, He is not only in man, about whom it is said, the hidden God in man. Every religion has something to say about it in its own way. Islamic tradition says, light of Allah is in man, and the Quakers say death of God is in man, and Bible says God created Adam, breathed his spirit into him, and Christianity says the kingdom of God is within, kingdom of heaven is within, and Hinduism says God is the indwelling reality in man, Bhagavad Gita. So if said about man, everything is clear, but what about the world, this universe? God is that spirit, that reality which vibrates in every atom of matter, which is present in every speck of space.
So to kill a species in a certain sense is to...
do violence to God.
To do violence to God. God.
See, it's not worship, it is not a relation, it's opposite. Right? So it is said, he is the being who sleeps and slumbers in the stone and the mineral. He breathes and respires in plants. He rules in insect, beast and animal. And he thinks, feels and reasons in man. So he is not only in man, he is also in the stone and the mineral, but in different degrees of expression. But the presence is there. The entire universe is permeated with the presence of God. This is actually realized by the sages and seers of the ancient Upanishadic era. And then the first utterance they gave to this experience was in the very first Upanishad, very first verse, very first line. They said, Isa vasyamidagum sarvam yat kinchit jagatyam jagat. This entire universe is pervaded by the presence of divinity. Whatsoever is in this universe is pervaded by the presence of divinity. Therefore, the entire vision of life was everything is sacred. Everything is filled with the presence of God. Therefore, everything is holy. Everything is sacred. Therefore, we cannot deal with anything in a profane manner, with disrespect or disregard or impoliteness. Therefore, the devout Hindu, when he wakes up from bed, before he stands up, he says, O Mother Earth, thou who art clothed in the ocean waters, thou whose best is mountains, forgive me, because at this moment I am about to step my feet upon you. Saying this prayer, man gets up and starts walking upon earth. Sanctity of all nature, everything here around us is recognized. Just as Albert Schweitzer says, reverence for life. The Hindu...
But the question is how we walk on earth.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yes. Tread even upon grass with reverence, with respect.
And even upon the grass?
Even upon the grass. Do not walk just unconsiderately and roughly, tread gently.
Environmental protection is an act of reverence?
It is inbuilt in the philosophy and the vision of life. It is an act of worshipfulness.
How do we make the decisions that are concerned with very personal things like overpopulation, birth control, parenting? How can we make those choices? We know the world is already going to have too many people.
Are we to exercise birth control or are we not to exercise birth control?
Do we exercise birth control? Do we inhibit life coming?
You see, This is a much discussed topic over the past 60, 70 years. Even these questions were put to Gandhi also. He says, marriage is part and parcel of a normal human life. And therefore, in that particular second stage of life, first stage is students. You have to control yourself, keep yourself in full possession, chastity, maintain your chastity, give all your time, attention, energy in study, building up good health, character. Then, in the second stage, you marry, have a partner, be a father, and be a mother, and have a family, contribute some ideal children to the next generation. That is your contribution to society. Train them up well, feed them, make them healthy children, good children, and then that is your contribution for the perpetuation of the species. And that was why the very principle of sex was put by the powers that be in all creation. If the power of sex, it is a power of reproduction, has not been put, the world will come to an extinction. The very need for putting in this sacred power, this holy power of being able to reproduce, procreate, was brought about by the phenomenon of death. When God did not create the physical immortality of man, and came into being, stayed there for some time, yet to one day go.
So we need children.
The phenomenon of death makes children imperative. Otherwise, within one generation, humanity might have been created by God and it will become extinct.
But if we have too many children, all the children will be in pain.
Yes. Therefore, you must have children, but how many is too many is something, it depends, for you to decide. Some say, two is enough, three is too many. It is a matter of arbitrarily, we cannot set number to it. But then, the way of limiting or restricting should be through a mutually agreed upon self-control and not through any artificial or means that may even remotely be tending to violence towards life. It should be something that prevents the conception of children after a certain number. It can only be done through a mutually agreed upon act of self-control on the part of both partners. And unless that harmony and mutual cooperation between partners are not there, it is not possible. Therefore, great emphasis is laid upon living your life in such a way that such a self-control becomes possible.
A friend once told me that when she tried to limit smoking, she didn't succeed, but when she learned to love health, she succeeded.
So positive, huh?
So when you exercise self-control, you have to have something to fall in love with that gives you the motivation.
Yes, fall in love with parenthood. When you are only thinking of yourself as a husband, you are only thinking of yourself as a wife, and man and woman, then the entire emphasis is upon trying to get maximum enjoyment out of this relationship. After you have been man and woman, you have one child, you have two children, you have three children, afterwards say, look here, they have been the joy of our life. Now let us make ourselves the joy of their life. Now our relationship should be of mother and father, parents looking after these children to see that we make them happy home, make them happy. So if psychologically one can start seeing themselves not as two individuals related by sex as man and woman, husband and wife, they start now thinking of themselves, we are parents of these children. If that gives place to the feeling of parenthood,
go back to service again.
Service to our children. They have given us joy now.
And to future generations in that way. Service to the world.
Yes. And if one more dimension is brought into it, I do this because I feel kinship with the entire global human family. But I also know, I have been told, within everyone dwells that being who is our common parent, from whom we all have our being. Therefore, every human being, every human individual is a moving temple of the living God within. So I serve my brother man, and in that I also adore and worship he who is enshrined in his body temple, in the heart shrine. I believe this is not something that Hindu dimension, Christian dimension, any dimension lacks, because if I am right, I remember having read somewhere in the Bible, when someone entered into heaven, right royal reception was given to him, and everywhere he has said, come here, enjoy this. He said, why, I don't deserve all these things. I have not done anything. I mean, not a very good man. Oh no. When I hungered, you gave me bread. When I was cold, you gave me cloth. Like that, he started telling him, God started, no, I don't turn on. Then he told me, once when you were a young man, you had come after a little banquet in the night, in the winter, and you are singing and drinking and you are enjoying yourself. As you went by the street, there was a beggar who was shivering without enough clothing. And just a grandiose gesture, you took off your cape and flung it upon him. And later he goes on telling a number of things. When you were coming out of a banquet hall, someone was by the door, you gave him some bread. Whatsoever.
What you do to the least of these.
This must be very that thou hast done unto
you me. You have done unto me.
And that is the spiritual heart of selfless service.